Standard disclaimer. This show may contain some strong language every so often, so if you can't handle a or a you might want to stop listening now. For the rest of you, on with the show.
7. 6.
Can't be, that's inside the room.
It's reading right, man, look.
Well, you're not reading it right.
5 meters, man. 4. What the hell?
From the Methodist Ladies' College in Melbourne, Australia, to Kutztown University in Kutztown, Pennsylvania, and all points in between, Lathers Blather, episode 13.999, feebly sticks up its hand and declares that it's getting better.
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
Tonight, things stay short and to the point with a review of Maddox 01, Metal Skin Panic. The heartwarming story of boy meets girl, boy gets stuck in powered armor, boy tries to see girl anyway. Plus a whole load of meta content about just what the hell's been going on here. Recorded for release on February 10th, 2011. Let's get this thing started because it's too soon to bury it. I mean, finish. I wouldn't blame the cohort for abandoning me after all this time with barely a peep on the Lathers Blather blog page. Sure, there was the odd comment every few months, a verbal checking of the pulse, if you will, and I've tried to keep my hand in by appearing on other people's podcasts, namely Paul Chapman's Greatest Movie Ever and Regan Strongblood's Anime 82, and a new appearance on a different podcast that should be coming out only a day or two after the release of this episode, provided I've got the timing right. I'll let that surprise happen on its own. But for the most part, I've been pretty quiet on why Lathers Blather just isn't coming out. The short answer is employment. I'm too busy with it. In my previous job, I was easily able to manage a room full of automated disc duplicating machines and printers, meaning I had loads of time to write content for the podcast and slack off in general, especially in the weeks leading up to my layoff from that job because the free time side of the scale was greatly outweighing the available work side. The job I've got now keeps me much more busy because it's for a much larger company with greater volume of work for a greater volume of customers, to keep things deliberately vague. As a result, I can't just sit and noodle about on the computer anymore. Add to that the responsibilities needed at home to deal with certain four-legged time sinks, be they half a ton or considerably less, as well as a certain two-legged spouse. And that means that this wonderful bit of audio buffoonery I chose to create a few years ago had to dry up on the vine. But there are other mitigating factors, namely the loss of the hard drive that held much of the podcast data from the past couple of years. The file structure appears to be still sound. It's the electronic bits that control the operation of the drive's platters that has gone tits up. All of the sound clips that I had for episode 14 were on that drive, as was the raw audio for what would have been the first interview conducted for Lathers Blather. I still hold out a slim hope that a matching hard drive of the proper make and firmware can be found so that I might try transplanting the controllers to the old platters. But this is a problem that goes beyond the farmer's wisdom of putting the drive in the freezer for a while. And that put a big crimp in my desire to be creative, as the same hard drive also held a significant amount of content for the Anime Hell show that I co-host at OhioCon every year in Columbus. But as at least a couple of listeners know, Anime Hell went off swimmingly this year, and my spirit received a much-needed ego boost. So now it's time to unfreeze this woolly mammoth, pop a chocolate-covered miracle pill in its mouth, and get its ass to Mars. But first, leftovers. Here's a review I crafted for the Anime 82 podcast as part of its Mecha Madness episode back in July of 2010, right after this transitional sound effect. Some things in this world are purpose-built. Aesthetics are not always the foremost concern. It's a matter of function over form, and to hell with winning beauty contests. Pleasing everybody who comes into contact with these sort of things is not a concern either, because the right people will appreciate them. Such is the case with what is now a relatively obscure 1988 OAV called Metal Skin Panic Maddox 01, released twice in the United States by Industry Trailblazers Animego. This was, in fact, Animego's first release back in the glory days of VHS way back in 1990, and again on DVD in 2004. I distinctly remember seeing the full-page ad for that VHS release in an issue of Animag magazine, and I'll share another memory from that ad later on in the review. Maddox, as I'll refer to it from now on, was a production of three companies whose names are splashed across many of the classics of the 1980s direct-to-video market: AIC, Artmic, and Pony Canyon, but we'll concern ourselves with AIC and Artmic, primarily because those two production houses were in the process of making the Bubblegum Crisis series of OAVs, the first of which came out a year before Maddox in 1987. In fact, some of the staff from Maddox were involved with Bubblegum Crisis, but I'm going to name only one, who was the director, provided the story, and also most of the mechanical design: Shinji Aramaki. Now, Aramaki is a name that brings forth polarized reactions from anime fans. As mechanical and production designers go, he's up there with some of the best, in my opinion. In addition to Maddox and Bubblegum Crisis, he's also put his stamp on Genesis Climber Mospita, MS Igloo, Full Metal Alchemist, both of the CG Appleseed movies, and for American fans, I'll also throw out a little show called Mask, and also Transformers. He designed Soundwave. How cool is that? But while his strengths arguably lie within his design skills, he's also known for his not-so-great directorial work on the astoundingly awful Megazone 2-3 Part 3, and again, both Appleseed movies. But it is clear that Aramaki remains a strong weapon in the anime industry arsenal, with his name recently attached to Halo Legends and the proposed CG Captain Harlock project. So now I'd like to start discussing this short 45-minute OAV. It begins with a minute's worth of the Maddox's systems being tested: the minigun, the sensor arrays, arms, hands, and so on. In that sense, it's evocative of the opening sequence of a feature film that would come 5 years later, Pat Labor 2. The care and crafting put into this opening sequence is evident. The Maddox unit really looks like something that could feasibly exist with the right amount of very near future technology. Things that will never be seen in the course of the OAV, like the controls for opening and closing the hand, and how the suit's optics work, are given center stage for a few glorious seconds. A little bit later, we get to see the Maddox 01 strut its stuff against a platoon of main battle tanks, taking them out one by one in close quarters urban street combat. It's in these first few minutes that I struck upon the best way to describe this for folks who are listening to this particular episode of Anime 82. You know how Cinemax has those late night movies where there's plenty of pretty things to look at, and at the slightest prompting, those pretty things do very arousing things with other pretty things several times throughout the course of the film? And do you also know that outside of those bare-bones structure, that really isn't much to catch your interest at all, and that you wish that those pretty things would just get back to doing those arousing things and forget about all the other stuff? And that if you look closely enough, you get the sense that not a lot of money was spent on this, just enough to get it made and put on the market? Yeah, I'm going there. Metal Skin Panic Maddox 01 is nothing more than softcore mecha porn, with nothing making that more evident to me than the shot of the Maddox 01 posed in front of a UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter, with its weapons and ammunition artfully laid out in front of it, in the same manner that photos of military aircraft on the tarmac are used to display their versatility. The cherry on top is the throwaway reference to an E-2C Hawkeye naval recon plane, just the sort of thing that strokes the wang of mecha and military otaku alike. And while, as I've said, the mechanical designs of both the Maddox 01 as well as the earlier, bulkier Maddox 00 prototype are top-notch, in keeping with the Skinemax special motif, I want to point out that Aramaki's story and Hideki Tamura's character designs fall way short. I'll start with the characters, many of whom sport shoulders wide enough to land FA-18 Hornets. And by that, I don't mean that they're sporting 80s-era shoulder pads. Oh, no. The physical structure of these military men is so goofy-footed wrong that I couldn't help but wonder if their uniforms and suits weren't five-foot-wide molded fiberglass with their normal-sized heads poking through the collars. Skinny chicken necks abound, and some characters' faces look totally different when in profile or from the front. Ace Maddox test pilot Ellie Kusumoto suffers particularly from this. Her mouth shrinks to a pinprick if you look at her head-on, but returns to proper proportions from the side. And then there's Shiori, the main character's love interest, who I haven't mentioned before, or the main character's name for that matter. It's Koji, by the way. Yeah. Her face at times looks as if it might be drawn by a right-handed person forced to use their left hand. It's all angular and rough. And that goes back to the memory of the full-page ad that I mentioned. I honestly thought it was bad fan art done by some American to advertise Maddox. Instead, it turns out, after I saw Maddox, that the character designs really were that chunky-looking. Shinji Aramaki, as noted already, is no Mark Twain, and as such, the story he brings to the table is not particularly involving. It's pretty basic. Here it is in a nutshell, and gee, I'm sorry if there are any spoilers here for this very old OAV. Secret military technology goes missing, only to be found by an ordinary guy. He gets stuck inside this powered armor and has to evade those who would take back the armor. Or at worst, destroy it. But Aramaki throws in a bit of a twist by adding in a romantic subplot by having Shiori about to leave town to go to university. And unless Koji meets her atop a skyscraper by a certain time, he'll never be able to tell her his true feelings. Now, given that Shiori shows herself to be utterly oblivious to events that happen around her, namely a firefight involving helicopters, powered armor, and a customized tank piloted by a crazy battle addict, I, for one, would be reluctant to commit to a relationship for fear that she'd just stare vacantly out the bedroom window for most of the day. Another bone I have to pick is that the story is as linear as a Final Fantasy game, with characters introduced just long enough to say their few lines before disappearing entirely off the face of the planet. Koji's mechanic buddy, the corporate suits and military officers who bicker over the loss of their precious powered armor that literally falls off the back of a truck, and even Ellie Kusumoto all reach a point where they are never seen again, their utility to the plot spent. Also annoying is the lack of real-world reaction to the events of Maddox 01. So you come across a mysterious military crate that unpacks itself into a suit of powered armor. Now, most people's next move is not likely to be trying it on for size. And once you get locked into that armor, most people are not simply going to go ahead and meet their girlfriend 50 stories up on an observation deck. Doubly so if that armor shoots down a military helicopter all on its own. And if you start to be attacked by another suit of powered armor containing the person who test piloted the very armor that you're wearing, clearly the best option is to fight back with lethal force. Conversely, that becomes a very good choice when you're also attacked by an insane guy who appears to pilot an agile personal tank with only his legs and prehensile penis. I swear, he never buttons it up. He's always half out of the turret. And the people of Tokyo must really be numbed to odd sights, thanks to all the giant monster attacks, because they hardly seem to react to low-flying combat armor crashing through their convenience store walls or stopping on a busy intersection. Hell, two jerks actually sideswipe the Maddox unit in their car because it's taking up too much space on the road. These are not normal reactions. And one last bit of bashing. The American dub is more wooden than a lumberyard. I get the impression that it was done for next to no money, and maybe over the course of a couple of afternoons, and there's precious little emotion expressed by the actors, and the voices never seem to be a part of the video, never a part of the environment in which this takes place. It feels layered over the video. Now take, for instance, when Koji crashes into the convenience store and tries to save face by buying a microwavable meal. Here, take a listen.
What? Where's the brake?
Here.
Looks like I've stopped.
Oh. Excuse me?
Huh? Yes, I'll take this, please. Can you warm it up in a microwave?
See what I mean? There's just no connection between the voices and any background sound from the scene, and it's just plain hard to listen to. While I've spent a lot of time taking Madoc 01 to task for its simplified story and other shortcomings, the truth is that this remains an entertaining little OAV, and with a lot of subtle humor, whether it's intentional or not. And it was probably the sort of side project that gets thrown a bit of money, probably in light of Aramaki's work on Bubblegum Crisis, which might have allowed him to pitch his story idea successfully. Anything involving the Madoc unit is entertaining, and the fight scene choreography is directed competently. What's more, if you want to buy this, it's dirt cheap. At the time of this recording, it's a mere $7.99 from Animego's website. Face it, folks, you've probably spent more for worse. Yeah, that's not much of a ringing endorsement, is it? Well then, let me just go back to when I called Metal Skin Panic Madoc 01 softcore mecha porn. That still holds, and it's probably the best way to shape it. What then would hardcore mecha porn be? Probably a string of transformation and combining sequences, the Gatai shots, from stuff like Combat Le V and Gao Gaigar. You know, the Tab A and the Slot B thing. Yeah, maybe I should just stop now. Yeah. And there we go. Much like a tooth extraction, it was a lot of worry and stress buildup, culminating in a swift, painless procedure that allows me to get back into the swing of things. Trust me, that's not far from the truth. The Lathers Blather podcast is available on iTunes and, I hope, all of your favorite podcatching software for PC, Mac, and all Android-equipped devices. If you've got a comment, leave it on the podcast webpage at lathersblather.blogspot.com or email me directly, richlather@gmail.com. Now, speaking of Android-equipped devices, I am now the owner of an HTC Evo smartphone, and as a result, I'm a lot more active on Twitter. You can follow me at lathersblather, all one word, and that seems as good a place as any to stop because, quite frankly, I think a lot of you would rather I shut up and get back to editing the next episode, the long-awaited episode 14, and its subject, in case you forgot, is The Venture Brothers, Season 2. I will conveniently overlook that Season 4 is complete. I suck, but I'll still see you then.
I'm not even good for me.
You're much better than you realize. You don't give yourself enough credit.
I need to hear that kind of stuff. I mean, if I had this kind of support on a 24-hour-a-day basis, I could have myself whipped into shape by the end of this century.